this journey that he took back in 2012. It was an Antarctic odyssey of sorts. Now, how did you begin that, and why did you partake in it? And let's just go from there.
Okay. Well, the trip actually was in 2008, and the book was released and published in 2012. To understand the whole story, we just have to backtrack a bit. In 2007, I finished my divorce from my husband, and it was a stage in my life where I started breathing in a lighter way, so to speak. And so I was just looking around and see, you know, what was around me, but in a nutshell. And I heard about this event, and so I went to check it out. And it was a multi-speaker event, and one of the speakers was Peter Bland, who is from Australia, and he has been himself to the North and South Magnetic Pole, and he had been taking people to Antarctica. And so I heard his speech, and I had a chat with him, and I found that very appealing. And so I decided that it would have been a good challenge for me, especially just coming out of this huge emotional challenge that was my divorce. And so I thought, okay, let's head into a more exciting one. And so I set up for this expedition. I call it expedition, but basically it was a group of people that with Peter Bland went to Antarctica with the purpose of testing themselves, basically, and so facing fears right in the face, you know, facing it, and being in a strange environment that normally one doesn't find oneself on a daily basis, and then see what would come up, you know, because fears are also connected with limiting beliefs we all have. So I had trained in neuro-linguistic programming a year earlier, so obviously I found that very appealing and very, you know, I wanted to test myself in a different way. And besides, I love traveling, and I always did, and I think I will always will. So I thought that was the right challenge for me. So I signed up, but between signing up, which was June 2007, and the trip in itself, which was happening in March 2008, there were 9 months basically of time when I had to deal with my mind, obviously. So the journey really started before the journey started in itself, geographically and physically. And so it was an interesting process the 9 months before, because first of all I trained as much as I could to be physically fit, but at the same time it was also a question of a mental training, really, because we all know the mind is terrible. It's a terrible servant. We should be the master of our mind, but we all sleep. It's a slippery road, right? And we all sleep along that road, because the fear generally is experienced during our mind chat, right? More than when we face something. When we are already facing something, generally, we are not in the fear stage any longer, unless we face a lion, that's fine. But I don't think many people face that on a daily basis, unless they live in Africa. And so that was a very kind of difficult part for me of the journey, those 9 months where obviously my mind was free to wander around and race as much as a racing horse, and all sorts of thoughts came to mind, obviously. And And I realized that I didn't know what it would be the thing for me, because I'm not very, I'm kind of adventurous person, so I thought, well, I'll be fine, I like the outdoors, and I've always been quite an athletic type of person myself, so I thought that, you know, kayaking is fine, ice climbing even better, you know, camping out on ice, fine. So I couldn't really find much. But I knew, deep inside, I knew that life would find it for me. Life meaning whatever you want to believe, right? He always knows better. So I was quite aware that I would have my test. And so I found my test. And out of it, it came the book. Because I wanted originally to produce a documentary out of my trip, because I felt quite lucky that I had this opportunity at hand and I could venture on such a wonderful journey and, you know, experience. And so before leaving, I thought, well, I don't go just there to take some nice pictures, you know, to share with friends or family. That's not really what juices me, you know. I wanted to produce something that could be of benefit to other people. And so I thought, well, if I do some filming, it might be, you know, the best way to then produce something. Because in a way, I know, well, just thinking about myself, and filming is something, possibly it's the medium that is the strongest, it has the biggest impact on people. And so I thought, yeah, that would be really good. But then something unpredictable happened during the trip that I explain in the book. And so I came back not having really filmed much, and I'm still trying to find some contacts to be able to produce something, and it wasn't happening. And so I was feeling frustrated and stressed. I was thinking, oh, what's wrong with that? Until I realized 3 years later that I could write a book. And that could have been another way, you know, to leave a legacy anyway. And so so I did. And so I went away and I wrote the book in 2 weeks.
Nice. That's pretty good. 2 weeks. That's not bad. I'm going to back up a little bit, though. When you had first become part of Peter Blend's group, what was it that attracted you to his message?
Well, I like the idea. Well, okay, possibly the first thing that came to mind when I spoke with him, it was that I realized that what he was doing to take people, you know, in nature and to test themselves, is something that I somehow I wanted to do and I still would like to do. And so in a way, I had this feeling of standing in front of a person who was actually doing what I wanted to do. And so I find it really, I had to go, I had to do it. I still haven't done it. I used to when I was still a student years ago, and I was still living in Italy, in my home country. I used to be a tour leader, so I would escort people abroad and on trips, etc. But they would be obviously organized trip. So not of that sort of going to Antarctica or adventurous trips, right? They were kind of normal, you know, trip by bus or by air, but the type of normal sightseeing trips. And but I enjoy the process of taking people away, you know, because it's always very interesting to see what comes up for people. Even if they're simple trips, it's amazing to see how people react to different things, different situations, because they are a bit out of their comfort zone. So when I met Peter Blend and I realized what he's doing, I thought, wow, that's it. That's I would really like to do that. And so that's what attracted me. And then to be on the trip itself, it was interesting for me, not just for personally, professionally, I wanted to test myself and see, what was there for me to learn. But I also went on the trip to look at it and see how he organized it, how he would lead the trip and all the rest of it. So in a way, when I came back, I had a good idea, or a better idea, of how I would like to do it. I haven't done that in reality yet, to take people, in such adventurous places.
Sure. I mean, what it sounds like is that's what you would personally like to do. I think that's the...
Yes. Yes.
You know, that's the physical manifestation of what you would like to produce from the inside out, is to have this...
Well, okay, because I work with women and I'm passionate about working with women to empower them, what I would like to do is like a feminine version or something like that. But I have to share this because otherwise it wouldn't be honest, right? The thing is, of the adventurous concept in itself is a very male concept and it requires very much to be in a male energy. Because it's just the way it is, you know. Being adventurous, it means to be clear what you want to do and then go out there and do it, which is, I'm not saying women cannot do that, absolutely not. I'm the proof of it, I'm a woman. But it requires to be in a more male energy rather than a female energy. And so I have to say that since I came back from that trip, I've been pondering how I could actually have something of that sort, because I'm very much an outdoor person, an adventurous person myself, but to have a different container that would be more suitable for women. And I haven't come up yet with something, with a package, let's call it like this, but I have an idea in my mind that is brewing, has been brewing for a few years.
Sure. Let's get back to that in a little bit, but then let's go to this journey a little bit more. So you meet with Peter Blend and you find this odyssey of sorts is very appealing to you, and you like his message. And it's a test of nature, it's a test of self, and you partake in it. Now, there was a period of 9 months in which you had a lot to digest, mentally, emotionally, and also physically, because you had to train, of sorts, to become acclimated to this environment. Now, during that time, there was a certain fear that you said, what was going on in your mind? What were you trying to train yourself to understand or overcome?
Well, I think what it was keeping my mind very occupied and it triggered the mind itself was the fact that I didn't know what would be my challenge, because I felt fit, physically fit and mentally fit as well to be on a trip like that. So I consciously, there was nothing really that could bother me, but because I'm an NLPE master practitioner, I do know. And I'm also a very much born psychologist type of person. I know very well that our conscious part is quite minute. And I think the icon of the iceberg is very well, expresses very well what the mind, because the tip is just what we see above the water. What actually floats underwater is like the unconscious, which is the bigger part. So in a way, it was kind of almost hilarious, the fact that I was going to a place where it's full of icebergs, and I was there. I was going there to basically face the unknown. Knowing that my unknown is unknown, and so how can you face it? And it was a kind of almost like kind of a symbol within the symbol, a symbol within the journey, and the journey was almost so iconic. And what happened during the journey as well, to me, it was so symbolic that still to these days I can't believe it happened. So
we look at the symbols, we look at the symbolism involved with the icebergs, and then what we can see, what we can't see, the things that we know and what we don't know, and then of course the things that we don't know that we don't know, which is everything that's underneath the surface of the ice, right? We only see just a little bit of it, but it really stems from something much, much deeper. Now for you in that journey, what was it, what was your takeaway? What was the challenge that you received and understood while you were there at Antarctica?
Okay, at the end of the book, I made a list of things that I learned, or I tried to summarize like kind of a bullet point for myself, but also for the reader, you know, to almost have a vademecum, which is a Latin word for like almost like a summary, you know, when you are in dire straits or you are in difficulties, you know, you go there and you read through those bullet points and see the one that is applicable, right? And so I did, but so it's very handy. I can read it if you want to, but I think it might be more interesting if I only tell you what it's been for me. It was an emotional challenge. And what it really kind of made me think, it wasn't anything physical. And so I'm sharing this because sometimes I think I'm not the only one in life that finds difficulties that are actually not a physical difficulty, but are rather a mental or emotional. And they are as big and as, you know, and powerful as an iceberg would be. It doesn't matter that actually you can't touch the emotional iceberg of I don't know, anxiety, of feeling inadequate or whatever it might be, your own. But it's still, it's like an iceberg, and you still have to kind of live with it.
Right. I mean, but definitely, it speaks to everything you were talking about earlier. It's like the emotional chatter that takes place in your mind during this process where you were preparing. It's like kind of the things that you don't know, you know. And a lot of times, being present is a lot harder to do than it is, because we know being present, being still in our minds, actually creates that space for us to have that understanding and move forward in a productive way. But it's the chatter that exists. That just compounds all the problems that we really find emotionally difficult to deal with. And I believe that's part of the journey that you were on, and you know, that's why the symbolism plays such a big role in the iceberg itself.
Yes, and also, funnily enough, the culprit of all my problems was an iceberg. And funnily enough, and it was possibly an iceberg melting as well. So in a way, we say to break the ice, right? Is an idiom to say, you know, to make things easier, right? For instance, if you have to start a conversation with somebody, say to break the ice, right? And in a way, for me, to melt and to break my ice, I had to go to the freezer of the earth, which is kind of hilarious. It's almost like, you know, it is hilarious in a way. And I found it so difficult to do what you just said, to be present. Nature really helps you to be present, because especially in such an extreme place, you really have to be right, because it just is. And still, even in a situation like that, where it's so cold and where you really have to be living the moment, still to experience that your emotions are so strong,
and your mind, you know, is so strong, and to master your mind is really the secret of life, you know, and it's maybe one of the most difficult things to do, I think, for everybody, really.
Sure, but on your Antarctic journey, what helped you, quote-unquote, master your mind while you were there? Because not only did you have physical challenges, but emotionally as well, but what did you do to help you cope?
I realized that how true it is that when you are going through a difficult passage, let's call it like that, it could be any challenge in life, right? It's almost like everything goes down the drain. Any things that you normally can attach to, you know, anything that has been a rock for you in normal life, then disappears. And it's true that, in a way, there's nothing really in the moment when you are hit by something, and not necessarily has to be physically, you know, but I was, but it could be also emotionally. And in the moment, there's nothing you can do except to let go. And the secret word, let go, is such a difficult thing to do. And in the book, I really put myself, my spirit, I show it bare, you know, like with no shield, with no mask, nothing. I really wrote it as it was, as it for me in the moment. So let me
do this real quick. Take us on the journey, all right? Let's go step by step through the time that you arrived in Antarctica, and then kind of progress through that for us. Just let us follow your path, and let us kind of become one with you and how you saw things and experienced things.
Yeah, well, it's actually, in the book I do write it like kind of a form of a diary, how it all unfolded, and little by little. And first of all, it's the encounter with nature, which is amazing, because I would say it's nature at its best, because sure. It's so desolate, there's nothing.
But I mean, let's say, how did you get there? Did you get it by plane? Did you get it
so,
by boat?
We rallied with a group which was formed from people from Australia and part from UK and other parts of Europe in Ushuaia, which was the southern tip of Argentina, and it's called Tierra del Fuego, which is the land of fire, and it's the basically from the last town port where you can set off for Antarctica, and from there we embark on a ship that was a ship made for experiments, so it was just our group, there wasn't anybody else, and we sailed towards Antarctica, crossing the Drake Passage, which is one of the roughest bits of sea in the world. It's very famous for that. And that in itself, it was, I didn't take any drugs because I wanted to experience the whole lot, the full Monty, you know, firsthand, so I didn't take anything, and I'm not seasick, but oh boy, I tell you, it was an experience to live that through that, and the first call was Deception Island, which is an island off the Antarctic Peninsula. And then we explored a bit, and I did jump into the sea. So I've been preparing for that because I knew I wanted to do that while I would be there. and for during those 9 months of thinking. And I was really afraid of that, to be honest. That was the only thing that in my mind it was clear that I would do, but I would be really afraid. And I did it, and it was strange to see how it wasn't comfortable, obviously not. But it's funny how it's true that when you do something, it's always easier than you think.
So this is when you actually jumped into the water, is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay, now, in the time beforehand, you said that you were thinking about it, in a sense, almost kind of perseverating, in the sense that you were constantly thinking about it. Did that increase your fears at all over the course of that time?
Well, yes, it does. That's why, I knew that before, because it's just the way we work, right? Our mind works, but still, you know, it's always a kind of interesting experience something in reality. And
now, did you, during that time, did you want to quiet your mind? I mean, did you think that...
Yes, like, when you then eventually do something like that, obviously, it's a way to quiet your mind immediately, because you almost enter in a different dimension. I've done other things, similar things in my life before, like walking on fire, jumping off bridges, and, you know, breaking the arrows with my throat, stuff like that. They are kind of call them initiation rituals, or whatever you might prefer to call them. And I noticed in all of those instances, what happens is that there is fear, but then when you go for it, it's almost like everything shuts up. And you enter a kind of different dimension. For instance, I tell you this. When I did my first firewalk, I remember very well, there were drums, and the whole environment was very loud, etc. And in my memory, it's totally quiet. It was totally quiet. It was silence. And I only realized the day after, when I talked to other people that had been at the same event, they told me, confirmed to me, that there were the drummers, they were playing the drums all the way, but I didn't hear it. In a way, when I went into the sea in Antarctica, I remember that I was so much in the moment that I couldn't hear anything else. And I could just feel my body, and in a way, not even the body. And I think it's almost like under the mind shifts into a different dimension, and everything. It's like in films when you have those passages sometimes at slow down, right? And it actually happens in that way. Or the experience is very similar to that.
Now, when you jump in the water, how cold is water?
Well, how cold? It's like how hot? There isn't much of a difference between -1, you know, below zero, or -10, or whatever. Anyway, water cannot be minus, because more than -1 or -2, because then freezes. So in a way it was warmer than outside because my camera wasn't working. and generally any you know, technical electronic devices, they tend to stop working, you know, when you are around zero. So you can see, because that was filmed, and you can see on my website, there is a trailer where there is a bit where you can see me jump into the water. But it was cold. But funnily enough, I remember doing my open waters test in Italy many years ago when I was training as a diver. And I remember I was in Italy, which was different latitude from Antarctica, and it was May or June, and it was particularly cold day. But obviously the temperature would have been different, much higher than in Antarctica. And I remember that experience being much colder than in Antarctica. So that shows how our memory distorts and our mind distorts the experience in itself.
Sure. Now, a question would be, how long can you stay in that water before you die?
I don't know if it's 1 minute or two, but I actually, Deception Island is a volcanic island. So what the group did was digging out on the beach a hole, because then...
Gabrielle, are you still there?
Yes. Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Hello.
Charles?
Yes, I'm still here.
Yeah,
are you still there?
Okay. The group digged a hole on the beach, so the warm water would surface, right, like a spa pool. But when I arrived, they had already done that and sometime earlier. So by the time I took all my clothes off and I went jumped into the puddle of water on the beach, it wasn't warm. So it was really lukewarm, and I remember that was the only thing I could cling on, persuading myself I could do that. So you can imagine there was a storm of snowstorm, and you could see the penguin looking very cold indeed, the penguins, you know, on the beach. And I, because the dinghy was already leaving, going back to the ship, and of course I couldn't miss my test. So what I done, I took all my clothes off, all my layers, many layers, and it was funny to see the experience, you know, to observe what the mind chatter was going on and was saying while I was doing that, because obviously it was a crazy thing to do, right? You don't take all your clothes off when you are in such an environment. But I did, and then I thought, oh well, it doesn't matter, because when I jump into the pool, the puddle really, rather, it would be warm. And I did it, and it was cold. I could barely feel it. You look warm, and I thought, oh, ha, interesting. And now, how can I go into the sea? But again, because I wanted to do it, it was no matter. So I just did it. And I actually remember that when I went down the beach and went into, you know, I swam a bit, I remember it was so surreal, because I could see not far the it's called dinghy, the little boat that was taking some of the people back to the ship. And it was surreal. And you can see that in video, in one of the video that is on my website. And so I thought, ah, okay, maybe it's better if I swim back to the beach, you know. And so I did it. But then I thought, and I jumped back into the puddle, but it was still lukewarm, actually cold. And I thought, oh no, I can't believe I done this. And so I done it three times, just to, because I remember the same thing with the firework. It happened the same, exactly the same way. You do it and you think, have I really done this?
Mm-hmm. Sure. Now, we're going to have to wrap up here a little bit because we're running out of time. But as far as the mind chatter, I just want to go through the mind chatter. What were you thinking in your mind during that time? What was the chatter?
Nothing.
Okay, good. Now, so then after you do the jump into the sea, what was the next progression? What were you, what was the next challenge for you?
Well, for me, apart the biggest one that was an accident that happened because of an iceberg that carved off wherever he was and basically sank into the sea. And so while I was ice climbing by then, and I had left other people, my rucksack with my photographic gear in it. And so I witnessed the whole thing happening, and I couldn't do anything because I was tied. I had crampons on my feet, and I was tied to the rope, and I couldn't really move. And I could see this huge iceberg breaking into two, like a bit the Titanic liner. And it was an amazing thing to witness, and it was real, it wasn't a documentary, I was there. And to witness that, at the same time realizing, the side effect of it, the down effect of it, it will be, it obviously will create a huge wave.
Right.
And it did. And to, again, witnessing all that happening, it was so surreal, and I couldn't do anything. And but let it happen, and it's very symbolic again, because how many times in life we find ourselves in situation where we witness some amazing thing, either positive or negative, but you know, but you can't do anything about it, and it's a strange situation to be in, and then you obviously you live through the backlash, emotional and psychological backlash of it, because the wave that the iceberg produces, it happens then in your emotions, not just physically you see it, but then it happens in your emotion and in your psyche. It produces all sorts of, it triggers all sorts of fear, it triggers all sorts of limiting beliefs, if you want to call them like that, or whatever it is that limits us.
Sure, but I mean, during that whole experience, so you saw this wave in the ocean created by the by the ice that fell. Now, what were you able to take away from it? Because you were in a place of fear, you had these limiting beliefs that you say, but you were able to persevere and go through it. Now, coming through the other side of it usually yields a quote unquote benefit or something that you understood. So what was your takeaway from that experience?
I remember when I eventually went back on the ship, and I reached my cabin. I was really distraught by the fact that I, from then on, I couldn't take pictures or film or do anything. And that was one of the things that possibly, to me, it was almost as dear as my life. And I remember that I eventually reached my cabin, laid everything out, because I did retrieve my rucksack with the gear in it, but obviously it wasn't working anymore. And I remember the first thing I realized was, gosh, in fact, they are just objects. I could have lost my life. And that kind of reset for a few seconds or a few moments myself back to kind of center, but not long, because for me it was such a loss that it really bothered me for the rest of the trip. So
sure.
It was possibly one of those challenges that I never thought it could happen, and it did, and so I had to then deal with that.
Sure, and what it sounds like during that experience, you know, a life and death experience that you clearly had, that stillness though, that peace, that centeredness that you found, I think sparked a little more than just, you know, this being withdrawn and not being able to move forward. I think it's also sparked what we talked about earlier in the conversation, where you want to create an expedition for women to experience this, not necessarily life and death danger, but to experience the centeredness. And I think you, as extreme as it is, like, you found it through this experience. And I think you want to share that experience with others in a much safer environment, as we're talking about, you know, having a male experience versus a female experience of this adventure. But it sounds like you want to create a more nurturing environment for women to experience this and have similar changes in their lives.
Yeah. You know what, I always consider, since a very early age, nature as the biggest teacher that exists or we can experience in this dimension, this life. And there, I can really say, when I was during that trip in Antarctica, I experienced nature as it's at its best. And nature, I think in our culture, but we are not the only culture that consider it as a feminine, you know, the planet Gaia, is considered the Mother Earth, right? So in a way, I do believe that being totally involved and in an environment where you really face nature, you feel you're part of it, and there is a, like a very little thin shell between you and it, a really thin. It's a spiritual experience. I experienced that first time when we camped on the ice, and I remember it was so cold I couldn't sleep. And I couldn't also sleep, not only because I was so cold, but it's so loud out there. You might think that it's quiet. It's not, because of the wind, because of the ice. And it's weird. You enter such a surreal dimension where it's like... I could compare it a bit when you have fever, right? And high fever, and I'm sure it might have happened to you, you know, something. And also at night, and you hallucinate, right? You are in a different dimension, and everything is amplified and becomes bigger, and everything seems more... you know, difficult, or it seems more fearful, etc. It's very similar. It's really very similar. It's sure, almost it's like a dream dimension.
Mm-hmm. No, it's absolutely. It sounds like it's also that same mind chatter that goes on in our heads when we are not present and we are caught up in, again, like in internal thought. But for now, how can we best get a hold of you and find more about this expedition that you took to Antarctica?
The book is available on my website, which is flyinginspiration.com, and it's also available on Amazon. And at the moment, it's available also on Kobo and Nook, and also on the website of The Endless Bookcase. But just for practicality, if people go to flyinginspiration.com, they can just find all the links to the book on different sites, and they can also see the videos of that I produce. And I also started releasing some of the footage that I did take, and so. There is also a tab called Antarctica, and they can see part of the footage I have. And also, before the interesting bit is also the footage that I filmed before the expedition. So, you know, what I was thinking before setting off, and my ideas, my plans, and. I hope it can, because it's totally uncensored, so it's me as I am, not wanting to be better or worse, just as it is. So I really hope that it can help others to come in contact with their heart and more, and their heart desire, because, I mean, I went there because my heart was calling me, and... you know, how much attention do we pay to our heart in our daily life? Maybe not much, because we are so taken by so many things. And so sometimes it's good just to pay attention to our heart beating, and sometimes beats faster and sometimes beats slower. I always got something to say.
Well, I hope that many people reach out to you and that way they can get a little glimpse of what their heart is saying for themselves. Gabriella, thank you very much for taking the time to tell your story, and we hope to talk to you soon.
Thank you. Thank you, Chuck, for having me on your show. Thank you.
Sure.